We're unmuted. All right. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colker meeting for a work session today on case numbers PU 13794 and PU 13795. It is Tuesday, July 22nd, approximately 9 a.m. in the morning. I don't have any particular opening comments. I'll check with my colleagues. Commissioner Christman, any opening comments?
Just to say that with all the other things going on, as our chairman often says, with the dealing with the sharks closest to the boat, I'm glad that even though this is not, you know, a crisis situation, I thank staff and the company for continuing to push forward and help us reach a resolution on the things that aren't necessarily closest to the boat either. So I think that's a good thing.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Vodorchak?
I agree with Randy. No other comments.
Perfect. Okay, just as a little background, who may happen to be listening, the commission has the ability, after the wind farms have been in operation for 10 years, to require bonding. We started out with four different cases. We had two of those a couple of meetings ago, dealing with two towers with Basin Electric, two towers with Minn Kota that we worked through those, have issued orders on them. These two particular cases, dealing both with, I guess, FPL at this time, Florida Power and Light, we asked for some additional information. We made it public. If someone wanted a hearing, they could request the opportunity for a hearing. To my knowledge, Jerry's, Leon, and Alana are joining us from staff. We haven't had any requests for hearing. Jerry's got a memo that he prepared that I've read through, but maybe, Jerry, if you want to walk us through the memo, and Alana, if you had anything you wanted to offer beforehand, did I miss anything there that of substance? Okay. I've read through your memo, Jerry, but maybe I think if you could just walk through it and go from there. I thought the memo outlined a reasonable setup. You trying to save paper, Jerry, and go through it electronically?
No, I was just getting the case pulled up so that I have it. The memo, first of all, just goes through the history of what you just talked about, Brian, a little bit of what we've done so far in here. And when you get down to the second to the last paragraph on the first page, it kind of, we got a response from FPL to our notice, and this outlines it. FPL believes that some form of financial assurance isn't really needed, and especially not at this time because we're early in the life cycle of the projects. But they feel that that they're an industry leader, and they've got some stats there. They've got $14.3 billion and more than 42,000 megawatts invested as a year in 2013, and has been recognized several occasions for corporate responsibility, ethics, and diversity, and has been named number one overall among electric and gas utility on Fortune's list of most admired companies for 8 consecutive years. It states that it has every intention of meeting its decommissioning obligations and is certain that it will have the financial ability to do so.
I had a question on that, Jerry, because I read this, well, almost a different way, that when they say they don't think they need financial assurance, I viewed it as them having the Moody's A ratings is the financial assurance. So, you know, they're saying that's not required, okay, but I think that what they're saying is that they are giving us financial assurance because they have the ratings that says they have the financial ability to do anything.
I think that's another way of saying what, yeah.
But, you know what I mean?
That is what they're trying to say.
So they're offering up financial assurances that if the question that I have is that this is similar to what we do with a self-bond with the coal, that as long as they have the A rating that we let them self-bond. So I think it's reasonable, but do we have something? I know you can go out on the websites and look at the Moody's, but do they send us something, or can they send us something that says that, and would we, you know, have that filed every year like we would with the coal stuff is what I would, for me personally, I think that might be all right.
The memo continues to say that if the commission decides that some form of financial assurance is needed, that they offer up this corporate guarantee. And the corporate guarantee is provided for in the admin code 6909-0908. And if a company meets certain financial levels, they are able to file a corporate guarantee. In this case, they do meet those levels, and so under that section, they would be eligible for a corporate, for providing a corporate guarantee as their form of financial assurance. And they did send us a sample of what a corporate guarantee would look like, or they sent it to me. And I attached that to the memo for you to to look through. And so in my mind, where we're at is, one, does the commission believe that, that some form of financial assurance is needed? And if so, is the corporate guarantee offered by the company in the amount of their, what they estimate to be their financial obligation, their decommissioning plan, I believe minus what they've already accrued towards it, would be the amount of the guarantee that they're seeking to provide. So.
Then would that change over time as costs change? Or
I don't know. You get the guarantee. This is a little out of my area. And so if we want to do the guarantee, I'll have to figure out what it is and how it all works a little better.
Let me get asked, you know, getting back to the original comments, I think we can easily confuse financial assurances with a guarantee. And a lot of times when I've been talking about that we need a guarantee, I've talked about having financial assurances. I don't think someone's credit rating is any kind of a financial assurance or a guarantee, because you can be worth a lot, but if you choose not to pay for something, then that doesn't really do it. The one who needs the money any good. So I think what it is that the goal here is to have a guarantee from someone who is creditworthy. A corporate guarantee from someone who's in default wouldn't do any good. A corporate guarantee from someone with junk bond rating status, you know, you can take it for what it's worth. In the case of our coal mines, we have a level of bond rating that is required in order for them to be worthy in our eyes of providing a guarantee. And that is a higher rating than what our rule suggests we require at this point if we go into the bonding of the wind farms. For one thing, not so much applying to this case, but I'm just going to throw it out so we can all try and remember. I think we should, when we have a rulemaking change of some type, I think we should go back and revisit that and make this the same requirement as we have on the coal mines, just for consistency purposes. Our current rule on these wind farms requires a lower level of rating. However, in NextEra's case, their bond rating on the Moody's rating would not qualify to be to provide the financial assurances on a coal mine. However, their S&P rating would, and it's just, you know, they just need to meet it for one of them. So I don't have objection to their bond rating. It would meet the standards that we have on the coal mines, and as well as clearly in our rules here for the wind farms. So I don't mind that. And I do think that we should go forward with that. I guess one of the questions that I have is, and this isn't addressed that I know of in our rules on wind farm decommissioning financial assurances, but it is on our requirements on the coal mines. We would only accept a self-bond for 90% from the coal mines. And my understanding, I guess I'm not 100% sure of this, but my understanding is the reason that you have something else that can be cashed in even more quickly for the other 10% is so you have some money where you can get started with a project more quickly than going through what it would take to collect on these. So I don't know if we do this, I don't know if we are willing to accept 100% self-bonds or just 90% similar to what we do with the mines. The other part regarding...
One second, Randy. So you're saying that the corporate guarantee doesn't fly with you. You want a self-bond?
The corporate guarantee is a self-bond.
Yeah.
Do they... Oh, but, it looked to me like it was just a...
There's different kinds of self-bond. That's one of them.
Yeah. So there's actually money tied to this that they have to commit to. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. My understanding is this would show up in their books as a potential liability. And so in order to keep having strong bond ratings and such, the company needs to be strong enough. They can't just throw these things around. And so that's the kind of the whole point of having them to make sure that they have committed to this and that their records back that up. Like I say, I'm not so sure we shouldn't require something else than their own self-bonding for some percent of it. But we've never put that in our rules yet or anything, so I don't know if it's a huge deal. I did want to get into, so we don't forget this other part. The way things have worked with our mines, I think, I keep going back to that because I think it's something that really has worked well over the years. And I believe every 5 years that is revisited and reevaluated, and as costs go up or as things change, they could go down too in a case of a mine that was contracting, I suppose. The amount of their bonds are raised or lowered. And I think that that's what will need to be done in these cases. If hyperinflation kicks in and in a few years it costs 10 times as much to decommission one of these, we'd want to have it reflected, I think.
So I interrupted you when you were talking about how much of the total cost of decommissioning you'd want to have covered. I think that's what you were getting to. You were talking about 90% is the level used at the mines.
Correct.
See, the way if I could throw in, because I was not around when they the first time 30 years ago when they did that 10%, but it was the risk associated with the mine if somebody walks away is pretty big. You've got big holes in the ground and cut walls and equipment, and so that the 10% was required because of the risk associated with the time it could take. So I'm not seeing that same amount of risk that would require the 10% for a wind farm that it previously is required for a coal mine, just because the risk is not available. Maybe revisit it down the road, but this time around, I think a corporate guarantee is a good, appropriate step. And then look at if we want to have some percentage between 0 and 10. But the way I understand why the 10% was just that, if someone walks away from a mine, you've got big holes in the ground that can't be sitting there forever, is why they required that 10%.
And I think, and I think also that there's some difference in the amount of money that you're talking about here.
Yeah.
You're talking about a coal mine, 10% of that is more than you're ever talking about here on the table total, a lot more.
But to the point about the time of review, do you have any thoughts on that, Jerry, the company you talked about? Because I think it has to be reviewed, if not annually. There's, I don't know. I agree with that.
I thought about 5 or 10 year reviews, just in my mind. I don't.
10 seems like a long time.
Yeah. But as you look forward to the time when it's going to happen, more is known in 5 years and then in 10 years. So I don't know if 5 years is a reasonable time to review what the performance is of the thing and what the bond.
Let me throw this out, you know, because, I mean, there are just differences, but there are similarities, too. And why don't we ask that question of reclamation? You know, because one big difference is their bond levels change kind of frequently, even sometimes throughout the year. They add a little bit to their permit or they bond something out, and so that's fluctuating. But we should at least ask the question, if everything else is equal, how often do they revisit it just because of inflation or other kinds of cost changes that may or may not have occurred?
And well, they have some.
I think that would
triggers.
Be a good starting point of where we'd want to go with these, because on these there shouldn't really be a lot of changes occurring. Yeah. They're built, and I mean they're not adding and subtracting turbines during the.
Yeah,
you
the
know, typically.
The big changes would be the labor and the crane and stuff like that, and then for them, salvage value for steel, which they subtract off, but. We don't subtract it off, so that doesn't matter to us.
Well, and the mines are constantly changing, and the permit process is ongoing, so there's natural times to revisit the bonds, which makes it a little tougher for us because we don't have that kind of ongoing interaction with these projects.
I don't know exactly what the right time frame would be. I'd be curious to compare it, but it seems like every year would get to be a lot of paper shuffling around for things that are not going to change a lot. It seems like 10 years is a pretty long time. So I guess at this point, it seems like 5 years seems like kind of a reasonable time frame, but I'm sure we're willing to look at something different if there's a
Jerry, if a company,
rationale for it.
If a company, let's say they decide to retrofit their turbines and they're 1 point whatever megawatts and they want to take those down and put in new ones or change the guts. If they would change the whole turbine, they'd probably have to come back. But if they're going to change the insides with new technology, they wouldn't have to come tell us, would they? I'm just thinking about
it. I think that you told them in the order what kind of turbine they were using. They told you and you approved it. So if they changed out the turbine, I think they'd have to come back for an amendment to the order. If they did some changes inside the turbine that didn't change, you know, the turbine, what model it was and all that stuff, I think they could make those kind of changes. Like, say you rebuild them, put new bearings and stuff like that in them after 20 or 25 years is a possibility here.
Okay.
I think they wouldn't have to come back for permission to do that.
Sure. Jim, we were just talking, the three of us, and similar to what you and I talked about earlier about the Moody's 10%, we were talking about how often you'd want you guys revisit the self-bonds. Can you flip your mic on, too? And I say you guys, the coal reclamation and AML program.
In our
the Great Americans in the 13th floor.
Okay. Reclamation rules, we require the companies to provide updated financials within 90 days after the close of their fiscal years, which is generally year end. So we get updated financial statements from all of the companies that are the third-party guarantors or otherwise self-bond, and they generally include the most recent copies of, like, Moody's or S&P bond ratings and that, too.
Annually.
Yeah, it comes in annually, yeah. Generally within, like say, 90 days of the close of their fiscal year. So once they have the updated balance sheets and all of that. So.
You were probably around when they set that procedure up. Was there any discussion about making it longer than annually? Or is there a reason why you wouldn't want to do that?
Well, if anything changes where they're, like if they have an A bond rating and that gets downgraded, they're required to notify us, I think, within 30 or 90 days.
So even during the year?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, if there's any change like that. So,
So we...
Julie, I kind of hear the conversation about two things. Assessing their financial viability, that's the every year somebody's looking at it to see if they still qualify. But I thought Commissioner Chrisman was asking about assessing the cost of reclamation.
Right.
Like, how often do you do that if there isn't, like, a permit increase or something? Do you do that?
If someone has financial assurances for $100 million and nothing, they don't add or eliminate any of their mine area, how often do we let that go before we revisit how much that assurance should be?
Well, with our the way we estimate the bond amounts, do a worst case calculations, we do updates on variable costs for that each year. Then if there's generally a 5% increase or more in those costs, we require the companies to update and increase their bond amounts. Then it also changes if that worst-case condition at the mines change, then they update and recalculate then as well. So we're generally looking at that, at least the cost, at least once a year, then at least during permit midterm or permit renewal, we look at that whole worst case condition too to see if that needs to be updated. So that is done every couple of years that we look at that as well.
So all the time.
it's generally ongoing as the companies revise mining plans, whatever. We look at that. If there's anything with a revision that changes that worst case condition, then they have to update their reclamation cost estimate accordingly. So.
Okay. So how many of those would you do in a year? Like 15 or something?
Well, it's probably not that many. We have mines with multiple permits, but generally they have one bond covering a lot of times all the permits at the mine, or at least consolidate. So when you look at that bond area, it's fewer than the total number of permits. So, and again, the theory on that is if a mining company has financial problems, goes bankrupt, or whatever, it's not going to just be one permit. It's going to be the entire mine. So we look at all operations across that mine.
And that brings the question out here. If FPL has more assets around the state, I think, and so that we might get to that at some point here too. Okay. So your recommendation for wind would be a review of annually, or just you wouldn't really have a recommendation, more just tell us what you do upstairs?
Well, I guess on that, if anything changes with their bond ratings, if that's what you're basing on your acceptance of a financial assurance, that they notify the commission of that.
So we could do a 3 to 5 year review with a notification provision. If anything changes, let us know immediately, which would spin off us looking at it.
On the rating.
Yeah.
They could file annually. Their annual, yeah. Notice. Annually plus notice and right.
The other question is harder for me.
Right. 5 years seems the soonest I would think you'd want to go through that personally, but
I just don't see these having as many fluctuations
right.
as a coal mine would.
Well, yeah. That's what I was thinking. Once they're there, they're probably going to be there pretty much for the life, unless they come in and add more. Then you have a changed circumstance where you'd probably be looking at something different.
It's just that we can't let it be 20 years because we don't know what costs of construction are going to be.
Five to eight, or could we start with five? And if it seems like nothing has changed much after five, we can look at a longer time period after that.
And then
I'd be comfortable with eight as well.
And then would it be all right if they just notify us if there's a change in the bond rating rather than reporting every year? I mean, it's one more filing every year coming in here to track, and one more thing for them to file every year and remember. Yeah. we get a million filings in here on every little thing, docketed in the case numbers. And
let's go back to the first question. Julie threw out there 5 and 8 years, and I guess I would go either way. What do you think about that, Randy? So we kind of make steady progress.
I think we start with 5.
Okay. That's fine by me. Zilly, is that okay by mm-hmm. you? Okay, then now to your point, Jerry.
Requirement to report changes in bond ratings rather than a routine annual filing.
I'll ask Randy's thoughts on that.
I think we have to have the stopgap of the annual filing, because what if they forget to trigger? What if they forget to tell you that it changed? And I just think, a routine filing, we get it once a year and check it off the list in our new whiz-bang computer system that Steve's putting together, that will have those kinds of check marks that we can just file it and confirm that it hasn't changed. And if it has changed and they accidentally forgot to file that, then we find that annually. I would just hate to have a case come up where something goes, and it would be the case when something goes defunct, and then, sure. Oh, whoops, they forgot to let us know, and we didn't ask. Yeah. And so I think we...
call it maybe an annual report that they meet the requirements of 6909-0908. Continue to meet those requirements.
We'll probably say
that again, Jerry.
Magic words.
Okay.
If that's okay. I haven't looked at it lately, but with less detail than Jim has.
Are you okay with that, Randy?
Yes, and I think what Jim's got there should make a good
argument.
A good explanation of it.
Mm-hmm.
1205.1. This number right here.
For a separate discussion for the three of us, Jerry's point about, just more people doing more things. I mean, we continue to have more things we're requiring of staff to do. There's a point where you need more staff to do all these things. So, it's a later budget discussion for us. Because, we're already talking about the addition of Southwest Power Pool, Jerry. I thought about that yesterday in our director's meeting about other things we got to be keeping up with, and we got a staff of one over there.
Sure. I do, though, and I have been harping about this since I started here. We need to put more of this stuff automatically. Use the computers. Yep. Use these systems to help us manage this, all these filings and this paperwork. That's what they excel at.
Agreed.
One thing about Southwest Power Pool is we don't have any jurisdiction rate-making-wise over basin. And so...
We do for generation, though, Jerry.
So only for siting.
Yeah.
And so the level that we become involved in all of the day-to-day stuff at Southwest doesn't have to be as high as it is for MISO. But
I don't want to derail the whole work session, Jerry, but point taken.
But we still need to keep track of what they're doing over there.
Okay, so where are we at here? We talked about, I think we still have a discussion kind of in the background of, I'm not convinced that we would need that extra 10% of, in addition to a corporate guarantee based on risk. I think that's still I hadn't heard back from Randy or Julie on that thought. Maybe, Jim, could you walk through why that 10% is there for coal and just why it is there?
Yeah, with regard to the coal, when the commission adopted self-bonding rules, that they decided to... And it was based on a staff recommendation, I'm pretty sure, that it was to have 10% in the form of surety or collateral, whether it be cash or whatever, letter of credit, was in the event there would be a forfeiture of mine, there's likely to be some issues with the large areas of disturbance where there'd be some immediate problems, probably primarily erosion control, managing sedimentation ponds. We have all these ponds around the mine perimeter and that would need to be managed, and probably have to hire somebody to do that. And the thought was having 10% of the bond amount in the form of surety or a collateral bond, we'd have quicker access to that than rather than trying to collect on a self bond.
Sure.
So that's the reason for the 10% in the mining program.
Mm-hmm.
But surety is one of the options. It's not all just cash.
That's correct. In fact, with that 10% we have for one of the mines that is self-bonded, part of that is in the form of surety, and part of it's in the form of cash deposit collateral bond. So.
Okay. I don't know if you two have any thoughts on that.
Well, I think...
I don't think it's necessary.
I think you're right. You know, a mine can have cut walls and erosion concerns and all these things that a wind farm that's been sitting out there for... Well, we know it'll be at least 10 years because we don't do this until 10 years. Shouldn't have those kinds of concerns. I'm not so concerned about leveling that playing field as much as I am that we ultimately would probably redo our rules and up this bond rating
okay.
requirement. But I think we can do without that 10% and probably allow them to completely self-bond.
Just want to make sure that we have good rationale that we can explain why one is different than the other. But okay, I would agree with that.
I guess, from that perspective, too, seeing what wind farms are, it's a lot different than a coal.
Randy, you're talking about the rules that you say they're different for the Moody's rating more so than the S&P rating? I didn't realize they were different, to tell you the truth.
They could be different potentially in this case. Our rules require wind that they would have... A BAA or higher from Moody's or a BBB from Standard & Poor's.
Okay.
And those are the ratings that would be immediately below an A3 from Moody's or an A- from Standard & Poor's. So that lower level would be acceptable by our rules for a wind farm, would not on a coal mine. In this particular case, they have the BAA from Moody's, so it would not be acceptable on a mine, but they have the A- from Standard & Poor's, which would be acceptable. So, and they just have to meet either or. So this is acceptable. I think we should just set this all up to the A ratings, and then they're the same, but in this case it makes it anyways. So.
No, I think for a future discussion I would agree with that. They should be the same. That means raising one or lowering the other, but they should be similar.
Right.
Yeah, there was some discussion of that when we adopted these rules. I can't remember all of the details, but I remember it was talked about, and this is what we ended up with.
Okay. Remember, the rules were a great compromise.
Yeah. Of
among
course.
Many parties.
Yeah. Of course.
Yes. So.
So you're counseling us that it's not as easy as just putting it in and it'll walk
different
through.
Time now, though, too.
Yeah.
It'd be worth looking back to see what the issues were then.
Okay, so let me walk through what I think. So we talked about the ability to do the guarantee, so we'd require the guarantee. The 10% at this point, we're not interested in that. Looking at the annually, they would file their update of their financial ratings. The cost of decommissioning, we'd look at every 5 years. What am I missing here? Anyone?
Well, I think you've covered the points that I am able to understand and deal with today. That what do you call it, the contract or the other attachment that Jerry sent out?
The guarantee itself.
The legal stuff? I don't fully understand. I think that's something that legal needs to look over. And I'm not saying that there's not a problem in there, but I'm not saying there is either.
Oh, I see your point.
It needs a legal analysis.
What I would envision is that we issue an order, and then this would be part of a compliance filing afterwards that you would accept or reject.
Oh, the actual guarantee.
That's the way I envision this working.
Okay. Repeat that.
We would issue an order telling them to go ahead and file their corporate guarantee and then file it for approval. And then they would file it and we would accept it or reject it.
Similar to a tariff filing.
Yeah, that's fine. Could we talk for 1 second about the first question they raised, which is that asking for financial assurance at this time is premature, so we can respond to that, or they can demand a hearing or whatever they want to.
Oh, sure.
Listening to it.
They say that they expect this thing to last another 19 years, and therefore we don't need to worry about it yet.
Yes, and I'm hearing the commission say, well, we want to worry about it, but I was wondering what the commission's thoughts were on that. I mean, if you're requiring all this, you've answered that. Yes, I want it now, but I need your rationale so we can answer it in the order.
Why we require it now, why we shouldn't be waiting?
Exactly.
Until it's triggered?
Not until it's triggered, but perhaps.
Well, they're suggesting that you wait until.
Well, they are. They are suggesting that sub question, but.
You know, downgrade, a credit downgrade.
Yeah.
Would we even need to address it?
I mean, provide more secure protection from this day forward, I guess. I mean, just.
Yeah.
Seems like.
But the rule provides that you can require it in 10 years. 10 years are up. They're not going to appeal this. I mean.
Well, but you can't. To Alana's point, though, you have to assume everybody appeals everything.
Yeah.
But I think the rationale, though, is just what I've just heard, that the rules say we may do it. We've looked at it. We feel, given the uncertainty of the current financial markets, that they think this is a problem. I mean, I think, Alana, you can make something there sound really good.
You know, the importance of reclamation, the impact on the landscape. We want to make sure that these projects have proper financial means to reclaim them appropriately.
Thank you.
No, great question, though, Alana.
No, I don't want to. I didn't want to write an order that assumed an answer that wasn't spoken here.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Okay.
Good.
Good point. Okay, Jerry, can you do all this magic by the next meeting?
Agenda days tomorrow.
No.
I can't. I mean, I couldn't.
No, let us aim for the next agenda if we could.
Okay. Well, then, if you could put out the draft, and if one of us requests wants a work session, then we'll schedule one. If that sounds okay to Randy and Julie.
So, are you going to kind of be able to take a look at that contract and see if you see any big red flags in it between now and then?
Yes.
I mean, if there's something that just jumps out at us, there's no sense in going through the whole process and wait until they've filed it and then saying, well, no, this isn't going to work.
No, and they didn't file this contract either. They just sent me as an example.
Yeah, we'll look at it and see. You know, we're probably going to have to do some question and answer back and forth. But if there's anything that should be in the order, some requirement for the assurance that should be in the order, that's what we're going to look for.
Yeah, and then we could be addressing it in the meantime.
Right.
So, okay, thank you.
Yeah. Briefly, Jerry, too, could you add to the our agenda for this next meeting discussion about next year's wind filings? Because do we have wind farms that are due next year do the same thing?
I think we had a gap, but let me check.
Can you double check that? Because then if we have something we should do next year, I'd like to get rolling on the notices for those now.
Yeah, I'll check them, but we first cited that PPM project in 2005, And they didn't build it for a couple of years after that. And so I'm...
Well, can you just double-check? Let's put it on for discussion for the next meeting. All right. Julie, anything else?
Nope.
Randy, anything else?
I do not, but I might have an answer here for you.
What's our next meeting?
Just our own reliability discussion about the Fargo thing. Yeah.
Good. It looks like from my chart, which I'm not sure it's complete, these came on in October of 2003. And then, you know, there's some other, you know, like ones on Fort Totten Wind Project and Belcourt Wind Project, the single turbine ones that
non-jurisdiction.
I probably won't be doing anything with. But it looks to me like the next one is Velva that came in service in 2005, but it doesn't have a month on here. So there may, in fact, be one, but I wouldn't know if it would be January or December or anywhere in between of 2005.
Okay.
All right. Jerry, Alana, Jim, anything else? All right, we'll go ahead and close the work session on case numbers PU 13794 and PU 13795. Thank you all.